Hello and welcome to Reconnect. This is your host, Barry Phillips. Thank you so much for taking some time to join with me today as we one more time look at the book of Yochanan, chapter number 13, and examine this high drama that is taking place in an upper room, sealed away, in a private setting. Yeshua and his 12 Talmudim, or disciples, are gathering to experience a Pesach meal together, a Seder. And we need to examine the significance of some things that are taking place. Last time we were together, we were talking about the significance of Pesach. We talked about the significance of Yeshua realizing the time element that was involved in this particular chapter. He is getting ready to move from one realm to the other, from the realm of the physical earthly realm to that of the Ruach, that is the spiritual realm. We've also talked about the fact that he loved these men. He abhorred himself into these men. He had invested himself in these men, and he was about to entrust the entirety of the building of the kingdom, as far as this earthly realm is considered, into their hands. And then finally, last week, we talked about the significance of the fact that Yehuda of Kiriath, Judas Iscariot, as the King James says, had some element within him that could be bought. There was some sense of an inclination within him that was up for sale, where he would deem his actions to be more righteous or perhaps more beneficial, especially to himself, than the choices that Yeshua was making. I personally believe that Yehuda thought that he could force Yeshua's hand into defending himself, that he would not yield to death as a servant, but rather that he would fight and he would stand up and ultimately resist and overthrow the Roman government governing power over their area, over the land of Israel. And that didn't happen. So out of disillusionment, out of depression as to what he had done, he ends up taking his own life. All right, that's another chapter. So we have these things established. We come to verse 3, again, that reiterates that Yeshua knows that the Father has given all into his hands and that he had come from Elohim and was going back to Elohim. I tell you, it's important, and I want to get into this chapter 13, verse 4, where we talk about the exchange of garments. I want to get there in a second, but just for a moment, if you don't know where you came from, it may be difficult to know where you're going. By that, I mean this. Every one of us have a destiny. Every one of us, there is an apportioned part of life in this world that has been given to us. The psalmist says, Father, teach me to number my days. So we have an opportunity of life here. There is a purpose for you coming into this world. The moment that the embryo that you were was conceived in your mother's womb, at that instant, again, I believe, and the rabbis teach this, I agree, Yah took a soul of choice, one excruciatingly determined, can I say it that way, one particularly determined to become you. And he joined that soul to that embryo so that life was established. And you were designed. David says that all of his members were formed. You knew us. He knows us. He has known us from the beginning. He has determined our makeup, our personality. He has understood the life experiences and environmental pressures that we would experience that would shape and form us into the individual that we are right now. I'm trying to tell you that you're not an accident. You're not a fluke. You're not an oddball. But on purpose, Yahweh, your creator, designed, wired, and facilitated you exactly as you are. Now, that does not mean that if you're sick and broke and depressed and dysfunctional, that that is his design for you. No, that's what the things around you have produced in you. And we can either settle for that end result, or we can seek his face and say, Father, what is it that you want for me? Why am I here? What am I to do? Where am I going? And how do you want me to accomplish this? These are the kind of questions that I'm learning to ask and realize that I've not been given just to simply meander through life and take life as it comes. As Doris Day used to sing, Que sera, sera, whatever will be, will be. That's not covenant living. It sounds good and it's a warm, fuzzy feeling for a song, but that's not our destiny. Yeshua did not bleed and die on executioner's stake and then experience resurrection power to invest in us for you and I to live a defeated, meaningless, worthless, broken, sick lifestyle. He's called us to determine and discern the destiny that has been laid out for us and then set ourselves into positive steps to get that thing accomplished. Several years ago, and again, I'll try to get to verse 4 in a second. Several years ago, a dear friend and brother, Hanok Young, from kolyehuda.com, an observant Jewish brother from Israel, fascinating man, came to our congregation here at House of David, and he began to describe the difference between the outlook on prophecy between those who consider themselves Christians or even Hebraic roots folks and those who are Jewish in their perspective. And he said, you guys tend to believe, well, he prophesied it, therefore it must happen, and we're going to sit back and watch and see how he does it. Knowing that the prophecy has been decreed, it's got to take place, we'll just stay out of his way and let him do it. By contrast, the Jewish mind says, this is what he's prophesied will take place. This is our job description. If the prophecy is that a great hole is going to be dug in the ground, get a shovel to start digging. In other words, the prophecies are what we're supposed to do. We're not getting in his way. We're becoming partners with him and bringing to pass his will. That shook me and has began a journey in me, thank you, Hanok, to begin to realize I can't sit back and wait for things to happen. If I know something to be his will, then I need to put my hand to the plow and not look back. I need to be involved in that process, and I need to be an instigator, an innovator, an investigator. How do you want this done? An intercessor. How do I pray for this to come to pass? And then become involved with that and get it done. Yeshua knew that he needed to die. He knew that he was going to be resurrected. And he did not back up from that opportunity, but rather he embraced it, painful though it was going to be, because he knew what was going to happen. And he knew the end results. And having all these things gone on in his mind as a foundation, we finally come to verse number 4, where it says that he stands up, takes off outer garments, and girds himself with some form of a servant-style garment, a towel, one translation calls it, a cloth, another one is translating it. He girds himself with that which enables him to dry feet. Now, we've often heard perhaps the phrase that, quote, clothes make the man, unquote. So you can take someone who is ill-educated and not very well personally groomed, someone who's rough around the edges. You can give them a haircut and a bath and clean them up and put clothes on them that speak of a much higher station in life. A man in a nice suit and tie and shiny shoes and a well-kept appearance. That man will not only, in his mind, he may not understand how to conduct himself, but he will begin to move differently. If he looks in the mirror and he sees himself physically transformed, something happens in the mind where he begins to see himself differently. Clothes make the man. Now, our style of and manner of dress reveal more than what we just think is comfortable. In fact, if you only wear predominantly loose or comfortable clothes, then that says that what's important to you is comfort. Someone else, it's all about color coordination, or they wouldn't dare put on a plaid shirt with polka dot pants. Well, for some, that's the new style. I'd never do it, but it's about color coordination or fabric coordination or appearances. Others, the importance is the cultural rules of expectations. Whether, you know, where the hem lines and necklines are and what the length of the shirt is, or whether you wear a shirt, or how you would attire yourself. For many in our Hebraic Roots movement, it's about modesty. For someone else, it's about a style or a fad. Whatever those things are, Yeshua, if we make that application, what he was presenting as important to him was servanthood. The color of the towel or the cloth may not have been near as important, but it was the fact that he took off the outer garments and he began to robe himself in service. He was revealing that he was divesting himself of any due esteem. For the hour that he was entering into was not about being served, but serving. And he was to play the ultimate role in service. Philippians chapter 2, and if we examine verse 5 through 8, and I'm flipping there very, very quickly here. The word says, "For let this mind be in you, which was also in Messiah Yeshua, who being in the form of Elohim, did not regard equality with Elohim a matter to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a servant, and came to be in the likeness of men. And having been found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, death even of a stake." Now, for that reason, Rav Shul goes on, Yahweh, our Elohim, then is exalted him and given him the name which is above every name, that at that name, the name of Yeshua, that every knee should bow, those in the heavens and those on the earth and those under the earth, and everyone is going to confess that Yeshua Messiah is master to the esteem of Elohim our Father. Now, all of that wasn't accomplished by the washing of feet. It was to be embraced yet in the hours to come. But Yeshua, hanging on the tree in our behalf, was built on and acted on the foundation of giving himself to service, refusing to defend himself, but rather yielding himself and laying down his life on the behalf of others. Now, by contrast, when you and I go through life and we begin to make achievements, we get honored with tags and titles. Sometimes we get a little badge to wear on our garment, and it has our title on it. And so we have been given and taught to strive to gain position and to have a claim through accomplishments. Now there's, you know, I just said, find your destiny and go for it. But the striving for our destiny and the seeking to accomplish something or other is not for applause, and it's not for the gain of a title. Because if that is indeed the case, once we have arrived, then our efforts are all about maintaining that esteem. We never want to go backwards. But what Yeshua has just taught us is that any place that you and I accomplish or gain or achieve, in all reality, we have been granted access to, any position of authority we might have, it is given to you and I, at least in the kingdom economy, to serve others and not for the aggrandizement of ourself. So if you've been elevated by some degree on your job to the role of a supervisor or some system of manager, if you've been afforded an increase of income, if you have been given the title of a teacher or a congregational leader, or a worship leader, whatever title or a position that you think that you have achieved, excuse me, the purpose of that being granted to you is that you might serve others. So, for example, you're now the worship leader of a congregation. You find yourself in a place where people are going to listen to you play an instrument and sing, perhaps. It's not for them to say, oh, you did so well today. I really enjoy your music. I really enjoy your singing. I really enjoy worshiping with you. No, your role is to lead someone else into his presence. So as an act of service, you first find his presence and seek him out, not so that you can have a chill bump or a one warm, fuzzy moment with him, but rather that you can gain access to him and lead others to him as well. The Father will advance you in order that you may find a greater pedestal to serve other people. Now consider this, in the book of Bereshit in Genesis chapter 18, in verse 4, Abraham sees that Yahweh and two messengers have arrived at his tent. And the text allows us to know he recognized that this was Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. He knew who he was. He was not mistaken in this one's identity. And he said, quote, please let a little water be brought and wash your feet. Can you imagine the opportunity for the creator of the universe to take on some human-like form and come to your home so that you can serve him and wash his feet? In Bereshit 19 and 2, it shows that when Lot finds these same two messengers in the town square, he urges them to come to his house to spend the night and wash their feet, washing the feet of angels, of messengers, serving them. In Bereshit chapter 24 and verse 32, the servant of Abraham is gone to find the bride of the Mashiach of Yitzhak, as he is typifying Messiah. And he was offered water in Laban's house to wash his feet. So it was common courtesy in their day for someone to come into a home to have their feet washed. Roads were dirty. The shoes on the feet were not that which would enclose the foot, but rather it left the foot open to the elements. And so, you know, it was their feet and their lower legs were dirty from the dust of the road. To come in was to a home was then a common courtesy to wash and bathe the feet. Now, while a maid might perform household duties such as cooking and cleaning and washing, it was the act of a wife that spread the bed covers and brought her husband a drink, and she washed her husband's feet, because those things were considered too personal for a maid to do. Only a wife would perform these for her husband. The bride is to wash the feet of Yeshua, our husband, to wash his feet, to honor him, and to esteem him. But the duty of washing one another's feet has been given to those who will be willing to take on the identity of a servant. It's one thing for me to bow before my king and to bathe his feet with my tears, and to worship and adore and to esteem him. But then for me to turn to my brother, who is on the same level as I am, we might look at each other and say, now who's going to serve who? Now, I grew up in a Pentecostal denomination where we had what was called a foot washing service. And a couple or three times a year, the men would separate from the women. The women would go to one place, the men to another, and basins or pails of water would be brought out and towels brought out. And men would take off their socks and shoes, roll up their pants legs, and we would wash one another's feet in that basin of water and dry them. While someone is washing my feet, my hands are laid over on their shoulders and I'm praying for them. What normally ended up happening was a bunch of barefooted men hugging and dancing and weeping over one another and knocking the pails of water out on the floor while they danced and celebrated with the love of Yeshua that was spread abroad in the place. It was a wild spectacle to behold at times. But it fostered love. Yeshua said, no greater love has any man than this, that he should lay down his life for his friends. I tell you, then in serving one another as Yeshua served these men, esteeming them highly, when it was he himself who wore the diadem of heaven and was the king of all the earth, the reason and the one that brought all the world into existence. And Rav Shul said in Colossians, it was for him that the world was brought into existence. He's now grasping the dirty feet of his followers, his disciples, and washing the dust off of them. The question might be asked, why hadn't one of those other men already risen to the task? Maybe they were all sitting around wondering, well, I guess we just won't have our feet washed tonight. Where is the servant? The servant was seated among them. He was their master. And Yeshua taught them, as I have done for you, so you should do for one another. Find a way to serve somebody. Find someone who needs the dust of this world washed from them and serve them. More on this chapter again next week. Until then, this is Barry with Reconnect. Shalom.